Hello.
Hello, how are you, Viv?
Hi, Annie. I'm good. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you. I can hear you. I can hear myself repeating, so tell your technical man to turn me down.
Tech man?
Turn her down. So you've got...
How's it going down there?
Oh, well, we're all preparing for the public transport rally down at the State Library steps today, but that's nothing to the rally you guys are preparing for, is it?
No, it's not.
Tell us all about it, Bright Boy.
Well, I woke up this morning. I think I've got the best view in the camp, Annie. I'm looking at the convention centre. We're top, you know, the top 20 so-called leaders of the world are going to have their talk fest today and tomorrow. And it's exciting. I'm excited to be here. Excited to march with my brothers and sisters in Brisbane. And, yeah, and I've got a guest here. I'll introduce him, eh?
Yeah, do.
It's Wayne Coco Wharton, one of the organisers up here, and the big guns, and he's going to... Wayne, that's Annie.
Yeah, g'day, Annie. How are you?
Good, how are you?
And g'day to all the tram drivers down there.
Go on, tell us what's going on.
And special g'day to Foley and Kutcher. Wanted to hear the end of the song, but we missed out.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry about that. I just thought I'd let you guys take the centre stage.
No, that's deadly. Yeah, I don't know what time it is. Daylight savings down there?
No, we're 1 hour. You should be sleepier than us because we're at 8 and you're at 7.
Oh, there's too much happening up here to sleep.
It's really hard to sleep in a tent that the sun's shining on, but... it's quite warm already up here, and people are starting to sort of get up and got some banners out. How's the weather been down there?
We've had hot and then we've had cold, and today it's just cool.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Now, well, we're gonna go out here today, and it's gonna be about, they reckon it's gonna be 40.
Oh goodness.
But, you know, we had about 500, maybe more, 700 people yesterday. I think the line, the march almost stretched to a kilometre and a bit. So it's, that was just a death in custody one. So a lot of other people that couldn't get the day off, couldn't get in from work, will turn up today and see if we can't make 2 kilometres.
Are you happy with all the events leading up to this particular event? Are you happy with what's been going on?
It's strange. It's really strange. It's when we spoke about this at the beginning of the event and planning the event, we didn't know what to expect. And when we came up to looking at it now, it's at night time it's like Soweto, and out here, it's if you looked at the old films of Biko and Soweto going on, and it's you know, it totally resembles that. You've got teams of 8 and 9 police with holsters and tasers and guns and tapping their guns in their jack boots, walking in from every corner, coordinated efforts like someone out of NASA National Dance Theatre, or someone's coordinated them out of this ballet company, and they walk in from every corner, and it's synchronized as good as those swimmers in a pool, and they come in and they try to intimidate and annoy the shit out of us, and so then you have these great big trucks, prison van trucks, brand new Hyundais, I think, or whatever they are, and there's about 4 of them, and they synchronize each other all night driving around the park, making great big gnat rattles, and then you have, I guess, you know, bus loads, 26 coppers in each bus driving around as well. So, and then plus the helicopters going in and over us overhead, you know, 24/7 with the spotlights and that. So, nighttime it's like Soweto, and daytime it's it's pretty hot.
But the thing that's interesting to me from afar is that what you've created in Musgrove Park is an alternative to this thing across the river or wherever it is, the convention centre. It's a whole other thing that you guys are doing, isn't it?
It is. It's, you know, we've seen what's happened around the world. We've seen, you know, and my heart goes out to a lot of those communities. I wouldn't know what it's like to live in a community of 60 million people in one city. You know, I've been to London and I've seen the housing commission skyscrapers built across the various parts of London, and I've seen how these people have, you know, how they treat their people and how they make their people live and survive. And it's not a living, it's not even living, how they survive. How they survive from day to day, year to year, week to week, month to month, year to year. And, mate, if I was caught in that sort of environment, I'd be looting and shooting too, and burning. But we're very, and, you know, every other place, and I think, but what these, you know, it's pretty intimidating what the G20, everything about the G20 is intimidating. Just the fact that they thumb their nose at the UN. They don't have any respect for the UN. They don't have any respect for international law. They've taken their bat and ball, and they've told their mates, well, I'm going home and having a good sook. So they go home and they get 20 other blokes, and they set up their own UN that does no respect for the UN law, and they decide how they can manipulate the world. And this is a global event. You know, what about all those other countries, all those other nations that sit in the UN that don't get an invite to the G20? Is that like the prom queen getting blood poured all over you? I don't know. It's intimidating. It's a psyche that people have really got to think about, you know. How dare these people, you know, I guess, ignore and disrespect the UN and international laws. You know, if this is the case, well, maybe the anarchists won in Toronto. Maybe the anarchists won in London. These are the things that if people let these people set the world agenda, these are the things that are reality. That's what it means. Mm. In reality, it means that the anarchists win. No one gives a shit about the UN. And these fellas can go ahead, travel around the world with their warships and their planes and their entourage of security and dictate how it's going to be. Well, you know, sorry, Jack. It don't happen here in Brisbane. It don't happen in Australia. Our people are warriors from way back, and you know, we'll fight for our peace and our honour and our families and our communities. And if other people that are quite happy to be slotted into little boxes, or, you know, that's up to them. But I think maybe the message that's got to go out is if the G20 is the alternative voice to the United Nations around the world, well then what we're doing here in Musgrave Park is the alternative to the G20.
Yep, it's the opposite, really. Theirs is all fortified and shut down. They're having their talk fest, which will really only benefit a few. They're only worried about a few, worried about the money. And here, it's open. It's we're talking about real things for the people.
How many people have turned up there, Viv? How many people are in the park now, do you reckon? I mean, I know it's hard to...
Yeah, I'm really bad at guessing.
But is it a lot as opposed to a little? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. So has it grown? Has the amount of people who have been in Musgrave Park increased?
Definitely, yeah. I've noticed it. We got here late Saturday last week, and I've noticed every day more people, which is wonderful. Yeah. Come down if you can.
Yeah, Egyptian. Got any relations in Brisbane? Give them a call. Tell them to come down and represent their family. And, you know, it's something that it's history. It's everything that's gone down has gone right around the world. I think if you look at the people that are camped in the park at the moment, is we actually had the head commander of the police come down yesterday, and we had a smoking ceremony, and we actually, after a very, very, very sad day, you know, which is death in custody, and one of the issues that's close to our heart, to everyone's heart and minds, the Commissioner of Police actually turned up representing the police, and met the community down here in Musgrave Park, and we actually conducted as a ceremony, and she took part as well as her major officers. And I think that's the sort of dialogue that people have got to look at. You know, this doesn't stop here. This is when we leave from here on Sunday. It's only the start of things to come. I think governments can only do what we as people allow them to do. And I think what's special for Australia is that, you know, in 2017 there's going to be a referendum. There's going to be a referendum. Most governments have committed themselves to a referendum. And I think the beauty about a referendum is that it's a chance for people, constituents, people, stakeholders, individuals, to be able to have a say and tell the government what to do. It's the only time people get to tell a government what to do. And if people in Australia, if the majority of people in Australia, Melbourne, Brisbane, everywhere around the country, decide that the whole bullshit process of colonisation and the occupation, the illegal occupation of this continent has to be addressed, and the healing of the two nations have to be addressed through either a truth commission or something similar to that. Sorry's not good enough. The Redfern statement by Keating wasn't good enough. It has to be something that has substance. It has to be something that can't be used as a political football, and something that has to grow with the nation. And I think, you know, Australians have to address that question of coexistence before we go any further. Otherwise, the status of the Australian government is that it's nothing more than a multinational legal company that I guess operates and controls this country by force.
Pretty much, as I see it. Did you hear what this tall, so-called leader of ours, Abbott, said yesterday?
Yeah.
David Cameron in Parliament. Did you hear that? I'll tell you when. He said, I'll try and find the quote, Annie, but he said when they got here, it was nothing but bush. Sydney.
Yeah, yeah.
He was talking to David Cameron. He specifically mentioned Indigenous issues while talking to Cameron there. And I was Googling some descriptions of Sydney there, you know, when the First Fleet when they came, and the descriptions are anything but just bush. It was an immaculate estate. I hope I get the chance to correct that loon. I'm trying to think of something I can say on radio, but yeah.
But this is something that they've designed this. You've got to ask yourself, why isn't Aboriginal studies compulsory in the schools?
I want to remove it.
Yeah, I can remember going to national education forums 30 years ago. It was discussed then, and there's still this reluctance from state and Commonwealth governments to have Aboriginal studies being taught at school. Here we're having Asian studies, we're having Greek studies, we're having all these other studies, but the study of the First Nations people whose continent, you know, this society is founded on, you know, is totally ignored.
Mm.
And, here we are having debates, or the Commonwealth's having debates about teaching Mandarin in preschool.
So asking, I don't believe, you know, asking our oppressors for anything has ever got us anywhere. You know, like any abusive relationship, sometimes it's better to just cut ties with this system and walk away, and then redesign a society that takes our values on board, where no one goes hungry, where this pyramid system where 1% can own 48% of the wealth, you know?
Is that what you're going to...
That's as I see it.
Is that what you're going to be demonstrating today when you go down the streets? Is that what your signs are going to say?
There's going to be lots of different signs, I suppose.
I noticed yesterday...
People hear about...
Before you go on, Viv, there was a fantastic captured picture from the Channel 7 News with the the sign saying Australia is a crime scene. That was a fantastic.
Yes, I saw that. Yeah, that was Robbie holding that sign there, I think.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah, look, there was some really chanting. We were chanting yesterday. They say justice, we say murder. Mm. And I think that was reported on too. So the chants are strong and getting our message across. Many messages, true, you know, we've got to cover lots of it. We've got to cover everything. We've got to talk about the truth. We've got to take it all the way back to these people and tell them our land was never ceded, hello. Mm. And then talk about all the things that's going on and swept under the carpet, deaths in custody, incarceration rates, child removal. It is just incredible, Annie, and we're not going anywhere, eh, Wayne?
No, it's like Viva said and other people saying, you know, yeah, we want our homelands are under attack at the moment. If you look at the Western Australian position at the moment, you know, the best part about what Aboriginal people wanted in this country was the creation of our homelands, to be able to go back to our homelands and re-establish and repatriate our society. And if you have a look at what's happening in Western Australia, it's genocide all over again. These homelands is something I think nationally, I think it's a couple of hundred homelands that have been identified for demolition and eradication. This is the whole thing about centralisation, where they're saying to many of the communities and our communities that are still maintaining their law and their religion and their social structures and maintaining their communities and their nation for, you know, something like 116 over the next 12 months have been earmarked for demolition. This is genocide. This is total trauma. This is this is an act of war.
It was also, you know, the bartering for common services for mining licenses.
Yeah, look, Aboriginal people, and there's a myth in this country that Aboriginal people don't pay taxes. You know, we pay taxes, as was, you know, many times over, and much more than some of the other people. But the myth about trading land for hospitals and roads and education and water is a total contradiction. And when we start looking at the proper place that Aboriginal people should have in their own country, it's far from being on the poverty line. You know, our people weren't born to live in poverty. The mineral wealth, the wealth that we our birthright entitles us to, is far exceeds what we're getting. And look, there's only one. People have got to use the right language to describe the right situations, and the situation that we live in at present is a Cold War situation. The Cold War occupation of Australia has happened since 1967 or 1930s, when it was illegal to shoot us anymore. And that Cold War process has been fought out in policies, in programs, and through laws and legislative laws. And what has happened is that this latest law, this latest budget decision and policy decision to attack our homelands is nothing short of invasion of Poland by the Germans in the Second World War, or the invasion of France in the Second World War, or the creation of the Soviet Union during the communist reign. And this is reality. This is what, you know, people ask me why our kids are hanging themselves or committing suicide, or our communities are dysfunctional. Well, you know, you have a look at Poland, you have a look at many of the member states of the Soviet Union during their occupation. They weren't too functional.
That's for sure. Yeah. Well put.
So I think it's a spade, you know, you call a spade and a shovel. And what we're doing here, and you know, a lot of the credit goes to a lot of the people here, lots of, you know, the people here, the consciousness of Australia. Australia's got to grow back its consciousness. And it's not a guilt thing. It's about having a conscience. It's about having some sort of psyche to understand between right and wrong. You know, you don't have to be a doctor of letters or a psychologist to understand that. And the whole idea about nationalism, you know, if you look at the development of the psyche around the Gallipoli, the Tobruk, the Anzac Day, all these things are designed to create a sense of nationalism that will form some sort of backbone for generations to come. You know, what country celebrates sending all their young men halfway around the world to invade another country and get slaughtered? What madness is this? And now we've got the biggest thing is the quest of young Australians going over to sleep on war graves over in Gallipoli, here they are building cities on war graves here in this country, and towns and roads, and it gets back to the average saying is that, the white Australians are saying, least we forget, something like that. I couldn't know.
Yeah, no, lest we forget. No, I was... November the 11th, they have forgotten, I think.
And what happens is that when it comes to the Australian campaigners, the first people, the Aboriginal people that defended this country, they tell us to get over it. They said, get over it, that's in the past. And so it's an absolute contradiction, and I'm very sad to say that my grandchildren are born into an Australia that has two societies, an Aboriginal society that is maintaining its efforts to survive and exist on its own continent, and are fully equipped and getting better at participating in this Cold War exercise. We don't give a shit whether the Cold War ends. My grandkids, my great-grandkids will keep going until it is done. Like we say, is that no treaty, no peace, and we'll give you no peace. And my grandchildren will give you no peace. And it'll come to a time, I guess, when maybe one of my grandsons gets the shits with it and starts shooting you to make you listen. And if that happens, he'll die a hero. And I think this is the thing that the government has to realise. And, people resort to terrorism or not. And who are the fucking terrorists in this country? You have a look at it. I don't walk into your parks. I don't walk into your houses with a gun and a taser on my hip. Some of these kids are, five kilos ringing wet, and they want to walk into a room with, Murrays with a gun and a taser on them. What hope have they got? And these are the people that, when someone walks into my space with a weapon, they're terrorising me. And they'll be met as terrorists. And people have got to realise that when you send half your population of young men around to the other side of the world with guns and ammunition, you're terrorists. You're not defending your homeland. That's bullshit. Yeah. That's terrorism. And the United States and people like Abbott and Menzies, these are the people that invented terrorism. The colonialist system invented terrorism. And the churches... The churches are the recipients of this terrorism, and the industries that are developed after that are the Aboriginal affairs industries and everything that comes after it is a result of direct trauma. And you have a look at the incarceration of our people around this country. It's nothing short of the concentration camps that existed in any of the occupied countries during the Nazi regime.
You know, when you say that there's two Australias, and of course...
Well, I don't like the word Australia.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say, because I'm trying to work out how to say this.
There's two societies that occupy this continent.
Yeah, and some Europeans, descent people who live in Australia, they might think that you're saying to them that all of you must leave, which is probably impractical. But that's not entirely true, is it?
No, I think that's... people believe that and actually... Well, maybe the education system is that poor that actually people do think like that. And I blame the education system for people thinking like that.
Yeah.
And but in reality, what we're saying is that there's, you know, people have to be look at this in a civilised way. You know, it's, we don't expect by no means to have people get in the boats and go home.
Mm.
And we don't begrudge the new refugees coming here either.
Of course.
And, you know, we're a global people. You know, our people participated in the global community long before the colony came here. You know, we were trading with Asia. We were trading with, I guess, many other parts of the Pacific. There's songs that go right around the world that belong to here. There's chants that take you from one side of the ocean to the other that comes here. So, you know, we were a global community way before the colonies came here.
Yes, that's true.
And so what we're saying is that it has to reach a point where the world's getting smaller and people have to become more tolerant and more accepting. And as soon as we get away from this idea about rights and we get back to responsibility and people's responsibility to one another, you know, we'll be closer to the mark that we should be at. And to the many new Australians, for want of a better word, but the new arrivals, the people that arrived in the last 250 years or 230 years, we welcome as part of our community. You know, they were welcomed when they first come here, and they were taken into our societies or accepted into our societies, much the way many of the people have been accepted into the movement now. You know, this movement now that's in Australia and leading up to 2017, it's not a black movement. It's not an Aboriginal movement. It's not a white movement. This is an Australian movement. This is a movement for people that want to see a just occupation of this country, that want to see our kids grow up in a just society. And when we talk about this, as soon as we talk about defending our country with guns, and people think we're going to want everyone to pack up and go home. I just want to remind everybody that the original sergeant-at-arms for the ANC in the South African campaign was a white Dutchman. You know, so when we say, well, we mention arms or we mention defending our country, don't think we can't recruit a lot of white fellas too that believe the same way that we do.
Mm. Anyone that thinks that way, Annie, is not listening because, like I said, no one's saying that. And once, you know, the wider society out there, the ones that are living in the illusion that is this imposed society world that Wayne's referring to, once they realise who we are and what we're saying, they're going to realise that we're offering a beautiful gift to them, you know? Hey,
That's Australia's
true.
Only,
they got to listen.
Australia's only young, you know, and whether a civil war's played out on this issue in the years to come, I don't know. But what it gets down to is that frustration puts people to their backs to the wall, and we're only a young country. I mean, it's a country, Australia, I guess, we're too immature. We've been too immature to address this question in the past. I don't know whether this generation is going to be mature enough to take it on or not, but I'm hoping it is. I'm putting in everything that I got into it, and I think a lot of other people are. I'm very proud of a lot of the people that turned up here. They've voted, they've taken the step, they're walking with their feet. But people, when we talk about right and wrong, you know, people have to look at which way they said. And in the black community, it's no different. You know, we've had arse lickers like Bennelong and other people as well, and we've had traders and people that hunted our people down for 40... bits of silver and their gun and their choice of women, and we've had these people in our society, and you know, people try to say it's lateral violence. Now it's not. It's bullshit. It's just calling a spade and a shovel, and the likes of Marcy Langton and Noel Pearson and Warren Mundine. These are the people that the dominant society has chosen to stick up there as their conscience, as the people, and much in the same way Philip stuck Ben along up there as the person that the token black fella that he was going to negotiate with and caused a situation where Pemaway actually speared Philip. And that's the only way to get the idiot to listen.
Well, you guys must be getting ready to go for your march, and we'll be crossing live across, and we're absolutely grateful to you for sharing what you have shared with us this morning.
It's pretty special here, Annie, this morning.
Yeah.
We've got a lot of community coming from West Papua, different, you know, the Indonesians, what the Indonesians are doing over there is a load of shit. What Gough Whitlam did to him was absolutely shame, you know, and you know, let's not forget the five ABC journalists in Timor. You know, everyone got up there and patted old Gough on the back, but those five journalists are still
dead
in the grave. And and I hope the ABC journalists never forget that. I hope it's taught to every one of their journalists that come in. What the Australian government, not particularly Gough, but what the Australian government, how they turned their back on those men and how they turned their back on a race of people in West Papua. And they walked away with it and let the Indonesians, you know, have what they were. But it's shameful, but and that's no different. But we've got a lot of Ethiopian people. We've got a lot of refugees that are coming into the march today. And our hearts go out to those families, the 86 families that died over the Ukraine. You know, well, we respect those families. We feel for them. You know, their loss over the air disaster there. And we hope that maybe somewhere when they're going through their grief that they consider what happened to our people in the many towns that those families come from and occupy here in Australia. So it's one of a unity march today. It's one that we're proud as Brisbane Blackfellas and Aboriginal Blackfellas nationally are proud to lead. And the Tibetans are coming in. So let's hope with that sort of dialogue and that sort of representation, we can go a little bit to addressing some of those things that are going to be answered in 2017.
Thanks, guys. Good luck.
Thanks, guys. Good luck.
Yeah, thank you, Annie.
Bye.
See ya.
You've been listening to a podcast of 3CR's live coverage from the G20 in Brisbane. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. To listen to more podcasts or donate online, go to 3cr.org.au.